find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hello, this is Tim Russ, Tuvok from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, everybody. Oh, it feels so good to be back, Mike. Cutting this down to one a week again is kind of nice. As much as I love the people who listen to the show, it's a nice break from talking to you. It's nice. It's like we don't have to pretend to like each other any more than we do. We're kind of like Opie and Anthony at this point. We did the show for like 5 years, not even talking to each other at all.
Well, I guess I want to ask which one of us is Opie, because, I mean, that's Anthony's the bragging point of the two.
Yeah. You don't want to be Opie. You want to be on the Anthony or Jim side of that equation.
Yeah. But I always feel bad for him, because, like, you have so many great memories of their radio show. But, like, the second they split up, it's like, I don't want to listen to you.
No.
And, like, you finally realize it's like... You don't really do anything.
No.
You're like the commentator, and everybody else is the play-by-play. It's like, yes, we know you hand off the ball to the running back.
Yeah, and when everybody else from that show is thriving and doing other things and, like, working on their future, he's still, like, really kind of bitter about it, and he still, like, brings up the breakup of the show and how he was mistreated. It's a little weird. Like, Jim Norton's doing a million other things. Anthony's doing a million other things. Jim Norton and Anthony still get together all the time for the Chip podcast, and they do things, and they're on each other's shows. Opie, I don't know. I was a big fan of that show, but he definitely got he was definitely the guy that didn't bring the comedic flavor to the show. And it's funny, when they break up, I feel bad for him too, because when they break up, like, the fans are basically clamoring for Anthony and Jimmy's show. Nobody's like, oh, do a... Opie and Jim should carry this forward. They did that for a little while, and that was over pretty quickly. But
yeah, you'll hear, like, crazy stories about Jim on the streets of New York and all picking up ladies, and Anthony is, like, getting into fist fights with hookers, basically. Yep. And Opie's just like, I tried a new type of oatmeal last night.
Yep. Yep.
It was adequate. I don't want to say anything about it. I don't want to get him mad. And is he still on the radio? Is he, like, technically, like, unemployed?
The only thing I know that he has is, like, a podcast, like an Opie radio podcast. And one time I tuned in, and you figure a guy that's worked in the radio business for, I think he's been doing it for like 40, like 30, like a long time. He was doing stuff in radio before all of that. It was like if me and you went to a diner and slapped the recorder down in the diner, and you just hear glasses clinking, and, like, it was a conversation with, like, one of the wait staff or something like that. It was rough, man. I don't know what he's doing. I think he may have lost his mind a little bit as far as, like, in the business. I think he's kind of like, I don't know, but I listen to Jim Norton and Sam all the time. I really enjoy their show. I think they've gotten really good. In fact, like, I got Sirius in the car when I bought my new truck, and it's coming up on renewing, and I think I'm going to renew it, because I actually listen to it a lot. So, and basically only them. So,
I do the renew without the big, like, when I renew, they're like, oh, do you like sports? Yeah, all right, that will be like $60 a month. No. You like, what else you like? Oh, I like Howard Stern. Oh, that's another $30 a month. No. No, I'm like, give me the basics. No. It's also kind of weird, the setup. Like, I can, like, it gives me some sports and it doesn't give me others, which I don't really get. Like, I can't get NASCAR, but I can get the NBA. Uh-huh. And I'm like, isn't the NBA, like, 20 times bigger than NASCAR? Like, wouldn't that be in the sports package?
Yeah, I don't know. I just got a renew offer. It was, like, 6 months. I think it was $5 a month or something like that. I'm like, I can do that.
Yeah.
Like, for $5.
That's what I've been doing.
I listen to Jim and Sam maybe I probably hear two or three of their shows a week or so, or tune in a little bit on the app. Like, I could give $5 to that. But, yeah, I don't know. What is NASCAR like on the radio?
That's well, I listen to it just for, like, them talk about the news.
Right.
Like, if there's, like, a wreck, you know, the story about, like, you know, the two
drivers mad at each other. I can see the things outside of the race, like, during a race being interesting. Like, you could do a million talk shows on that, but I feel like a race on the radio must be pretty dry.
Well, what they do is basically you'll have, like, a reporter for each turn, for the most part. And mm-hmm. they'll just kind of talk about, like, you know, they'll talk about the leader, they'll talk about the battles and the further the pack, stuff like that. When it's a caution, they'll chat with you know, they'll chat with crew chiefs and just kind of relay news, stuff like that. I mean, it would be enough where it's not something I would go out and see. Like if I'm trying to convince you to enjoy NASCAR, I'm not going to say, let's go on a road trip and you listen to this race. Ooh, Jimmy Johnson's in lead. Ooh.
Yeah, that's going to be a rough one to sell to someone who doesn't watch it and doesn't know anybody to begin with. Like, oh, cool. Car number four is winning.
Wow, that sounded like a big wreck.
Well, they sound like they're going fast.
Yeah. If we were watching a TV right now, I bet it would be something.
Yeah. See, that would be a hard sell. But I guess there's professionals that are able to make it interesting. Just like us, Mike. Hello, everybody. I know that was a long little lead-in, but if you're just tuning in, that's Mike. I'm Scott, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans right now. We've been a podcast for approximately 6 years or so. 300 plus episodes, and happy to be back. And basically, we like to bring interesting guests on, and this week is absolutely no different. And we'll get to him in just a few minutes. But yeah, so I'm a little on edge, Mike. I don't know how you feel about how are you with needles?
Well, every time I give blood or get a shot, I turn my head. I'm not scared of them.
Right.
But it's kind of a weird thing. If I see it going in, somehow magically it stings or hurts.
Yeah.
But if I turn my head, it's just as they advertise, a pinch and in and out. So
now I have a baby on the way, and God, we are on, when this podcast comes out, it'll be exactly a month away.
Hey,
1 month.
Hey, it's got, sorry to interrupt, but you do realize that's not a part of baby making.
It's not?
No. I don't know what kind of stuff you and the wifey does, but there's no needles into the man for baby making. Or they're supposed to, when they do the insertion, I think it's supposed to be the girl who gets it.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure.
I've been reading the dad book after a couple beers, so I don't know. It gets a little weird, you know. I thought I had to go get the dad injection down at the Walgreens.
You go down to the doctors, he's like, I'm looking at your blood work, and I have about 50 questions for you, my friend.
No, so the baby's on the way in 4 weeks or so, and you have to get, they recommend, like, they want you to get a flu shot, which I never get. And my line of work, I'm exposed to every germ imaginable, and I've never really gotten the flu, knock on wood, so I'm kind of like, ugh. I don't really believe in the flu shot. And then I have to get a Tdap shot, like it's tetanus, pertussis, blah, blah, blah. So you have to get it. And I'm kind of like, I'm dreading it because I'm not afraid of the shot. This is the part. Mm-hmm. Like, the shot doesn't bother me. I could watch a shot. The problem is I have, and I might have talked about this on the cast somewhere along the line, but I have a history of passing out after shots. And it's not during the shot. It's not like fear leading up to the shot. It's some kind of weird reaction that a couple other people in my family also have, where shot's over, You know, you're sitting there, okay, okay. And all of a sudden, the blinds start closing on the eyeballs and pass out. Now, I have fully passed out, I think, three times before. And then I've also gotten, like, to a point, I remember I was in the office with my mother one time, got the shot, went to get up to go out the door, and all of a sudden, I just, like, lost my legs. And I just couldn't get to her. They just started wobbling. So I always get a little nervous with the shots.
I just see you doing like the Vince McMahon kind of walk out of the office and no, that was nothing. Just swinging your arms and then just flop right to the floor.
Yeah. Well, one time when I was younger, I was going to summer camp or something and you needed some kind of vaccine. And I happened to be like, it fell on a date where like I needed like three updates and blood work at the same time. And I got all these shots. And I'm sitting on the doctor's table, and they're like, okay, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, again, those curtains start drawing, and I tumbled off the table and hit my head on the cement floor or whatever it was, the floor of the doctor. I woke up with, like, four nurses fanning me. It was like, I don't know. Definitely a concussion again. I'm like Troy Aikman. I think I've had, like, four confirmed concussions, two hospital stay concussions.
I got a flu shot and then I got 12 stitches.
Yeah. Like even, and my dad's awful with that stuff. Like he's probably the worst in the family as far as like medical stuff, like freaking out about it. And he saw me on the floor and then he started getting woozy and they had to bring him into another room to sit him down and calm him down. So
I just imagine they got like shut down a wing of a hospital because one of the Brennans needed a flu shot.
Oh, crap. The Brennans are coming in. Do we have a surgeon on call?
Do we have any room for respirators? No. The Brennans are having a baby. They all need shots. They're all going down. We gotta leave the left wing to them, okay?
Yeah. Who do we have on call today? We need the surgeon. We need the heart, you know, the heart doctor. We need Medivac.
We need every pillow in this hospital on the floor. They're going to fool you. They're going to say, no, I'm feeling fine. And 10 feet later, wham.
Now, in my defense, in the last couple times I've had a shot, I had blood drawn not too long ago, and maybe a couple things over the last 3 or 4 years, I have been fine. But I always preface this now to the nurse or the practitioner giving it to me. I'm like, I have a weird history of shots. I need to be seated like in a chair and I probably need a few minutes after just to make sure everything. And I don't know if like maybe finally addressing the situation mentally has somehow shut that down. And I've been perfectly fine, but it's still this weird anticipation, this weird anxiety. Like I got to go tomorrow and I'm like, oh God, like I really don't want to do this.
Now, out of curiosity, does Alex's, side, do they have any history with this?
I don't think so. She doesn't like shot. I don't think anybody really likes it, but she takes it like a champ much more than I do. And when you're pregnant, they're basically like drawing stuff from you all day long and injecting you with stuff all day long.
So I feel along with as you put out like kind of like a baby pool on like when the baby's born and the weight and stuff like that.
Yep.
We should have a pool about how your baby reacts to its first shot.
Oh God, that's like, probably gonna be a
like
nightmare.
We gotta see if the baby got the Brennan bloodline or Alex's bloodline.
Yeah, I can't even. That's the kind of stuff that kind of freaks me out about like upcoming fatherhood. Like I don't know, taking the baby to the doctor for shots. That sounds like a terrible experience. I don't know. There's like a lot of these little things that no one tells you. You just kind of gotta go through it, I guess. But I don't know. We'll see if I pass out tomorrow. I don't know.
It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. All right, we're about to give your baby a shot, and then you float.
Yeah, that's all I need is me to go down, and the baby's fine. Like, look at this pansy. Like,
you got to teach the baby when it's young. All right, before they give you the shot, now, this is mommy's number. Hit this button when daddy falls to the ground. Mommy knows what to do.
Yeah, it's not a fun thing to brag about, but it is funny though because like I'll get together with my cousins and aunts and whatnot, And well, the conversation will just like come up like, oh, I went to the doctor the other day, didn't pass out. And everyone's like, yay, like, yeah. Because there's like, because there's definitely like four of us on one side of that family that have all passed out like and numerous times. So I don't know what that is. I know there is a term for it. And maybe I'll look it up while we're talking here. But it's a weird thing to happen because, like I said, it's not. I could watch the shot go in. Blood doesn't creep me out. Like, I don't mind blood at all. Just, I don't know. Something happens in my body. Maybe I'm also weird because we determined on the show a long time ago that I have, what was it, tryptophobia? Fear of, like the small holes. I can't take it. What is that?
Now... one other thing I'm kind of curious about, why would you need a tetanus shot? Isn't it for, like, stepping on a rusty nail and, like, lockjaw?
I don't know. Maybe they don't want me to...
Why are you passing that to your baby? I mean...
So Tdap is a vaccine that protects against three potentially life-threatening bacterial diseases, tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis, which is... I know that's, like, that whooping cough that, like, killed everyone back in the day.
I haven't heard of any of the three. Don't get it. I give you permission. It's like, nah, I never heard that. It's good. It's
okay. Good. Fainting after vaccinations. Fainting, also called, I'm probably going to mispronounce it, syncope or syncope, is a temporary loss of consciousness caused by decreased blood flow to the brain. Although fainting has a variety of possible causes, it's usually triggered by pain or anxiety. Sometimes people faint after vaccination. All right, so there's other people out there. Why do I faint after a shot? John Hopkins University. Okay. Great question. Shots contain different ingredients, so it's probably not the medication in the shot that's making you faint. That means the explanation your doctor gave is most likely, especially because a lot of people get nervous about shots, even if they're not aware of it. Why would you faint if you're not feeling scared? Our bodies can react in ways that seem unconnected to what we're thinking. It's possible for someone to feel nervous without realizing it. So basically nothing's been answered. Even John Hopkins can't answer my question.
Like literally, not even the hospital, the real John Hopkins. I got named after the hospital. Yeah. They just walked up to him one day. Bro, hear me out. He's like, I don't know what you got.
No. You ever passed out before?
No, nothing I can think of where I fainted. Been lightheaded. I think that story I told when I got in my bike accident where my pinky was touching the other side of my hand.
Yep.
I think I knocked myself out, but nothing where it's like I saw something and went, oh, and fell to the ground.
Yeah, it's just a shot for me, but it's definitely... Definitely a weird thing. So I'll report back next week on how this goes.
I feel we should have like a shenanigan showdown where we're like, all right, we're gonna give you a shot of like sterile water, see what happens, and then just slowly up the whatever.
Here's the problem, Mike. You would give me some kind of shot with like bubbles in it, and I would just die. Like that would just be the end of it. And you'd be like, oopsie.
Well, I mean, I don't want to do this alone. Then it'll be the Opie and Burlew show, and I don't want that. So, you know, I'll let my wife do it. She's a nurse. She'll do right stuff. I mean, we'll start slow with some, like, water, and then maybe, maybe heroin. I don't know. We'll slowly figure out what goes good in your body, and you won't.
So your radio bit is strapping me to a chair and just injecting me with different things and seeing what happens.
Well, listen, we got to grain this audience somehow, and I feel we need a video presence, and that's the only idea I've come up with so far. It's just shooting you with different things and see if you can live.
That, you know, if we worked for like a radio station, that would be a hard one to get past the the execs. But you know, it's a free market, baby. It's podcasting.
Don't worry, boss. I'll get the legal heroin. Okay.
Yeah, like if I was going to be a drug addict, like let's say I retire and I'm just like, let's try some things I never got to do. Heroin wouldn't be one of them. I could never follow through with that.
No, my drug is already clear. The purple drink.
Purple drink.
I would totally. That sounds so refreshing. It's like a summer drug. Like every July should be codeine with Jolly Ranchers in it. That's it.
So you think maybe every July, like the society should shut down a little bit and just have a purple drank week?
Yeah, I mean, we already figured out we could still run as a society staying at home.
Right.
So we just go, all right, July is the purple drank month. Everybody works from home. Everybody gets a gallon of codeine. And just
gallon.
Well, I don't know how much you use. I didn't Google
this stuff. I can't wait till you do this and you mix a gallon.
Well, not at once. I'm talking about I got 31 days to
Right? Well, maybe, you know what, Mike? You know, you like to do that pumpkin spice whatever thing for October. Maybe for a full month, you should do purple drink November. And just live stream whatever happens after you take your gallon to the head.
I probably shouldn't be live streaming while I'm driving on the purple drink, but you know me. And purple drink whatever.
I'm crazy. Guys, I'm going to attempt to make my first purple drink. All you need is some Sprite, a gallon of codeine.
And don't forget the Jolly Ranchers. Only two of them, though. You don't want to get crazy here.
Me and my friends actually talked about that one night. We should have a purple drink party just to see what it's all about. But I don't know. I don't think that's going to ever happen. That might be one when we're like 60, when like our kids are older and like we don't have to worry about anything. We're like, now let's have the purple drink party.
Yeah, like your child, it looks to be a professional athlete, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to be set. So now I'm a purple drink kind of guy.
Yeah. Maybe that's our showdown for you. Like, we'll get like one of your idols on the show. We'll bring like the Duke boys back on the show. And you just have to drink like 5 purple drinks beforehand. And we'll just let you conduct the interview.
You know, you asked me that question about the Martian 12 times now.
But tell us about the Martians, man. The Martians.
Wow. No, hear me out. If the Martian could teleport, why did you have to save it from Boss Hogg?
Mike, I got to be honest. I was on a lot of purple drink when we made that episode. So I have no answer for that. Well, we are not on purple drink, but we do have an interview to do, Mike. And we got a good one today. Who we got?
Definitely. Tonight we got be chatting with actor and singer Tim Russ. Now, some of you might have seen him in Spaceballs, Samantha Who. You might even see him perform with his band on the Howard Stern Show. But you probably know him best as playing Tuvok on the series Star Trek Voyager. So we're going to be chatting with him on his long-storied career and find out how he got into the role.
Tuvok. Tuvok, miss. Yes. So let's get Tim Russ on the line.
Hey, awesome. Tim, we really appreciate some time here on the show. How you been doing?
I'm all right, man. Just getting through this craziness as best I can.
Yeah, it's a tough time, tough times and all.
Certainly.
You know, the first question, I always find with these interviews, the first question is the hardest one to kind of figure out how to kind of break the ice. And I think I found something for this. As I've been researching for our interview tonight, on your Wikipedia, the third sentence under life and career is just plainly, during his early life, Tim Russ owned many dogs. So my question is, how many dogs did you have that they needed to write that? And if it's a lot of dogs, I want to tell you, I am a huge dog lover, and we might just talk only about that tonight.
I'm not sure why that's on there. Wikipedia is like, I think it's a free for all that site sometimes. I had growing up, I had one dog when I was in my early teens. I want to say when I was between 10 and 15 or so. And then I had another one later on when I was actually we had two Cocker Spaniels in the 70s and into the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, mid 80s. And then that was it. I haven't had any dogs since that time.
Wow, Wikipedia, that you let me
say, yeah, personally owned. No, my family had them, you know, but it wasn't a lot. It was, you know, after the first one passed away, we got another, you know, couple, actually it was a mother and daughter. We had one and she bred and we sold the other pups and kept one. So, I mean, that was, you know, that's pretty normal. I don't think it's...
Yeah, no, it sounds like you had dogs, the exact normal amount of dogs that people would have.
Like it sounds like I had a kennel. I didn't have a kennel, though.
Yeah, the weirdest thing, it's not only that there's the sentence in your life and career, it actually has, like, a reference citation to that no, which makes it extra odd. Like, somebody went out of their way to say, no, Tim Russ owns dogs. He don't play around.
Wow, that's remarkable. Yeah, I like them as well. I haven't owned any on my own since that time. I couldn't because I was always traveling in and out of town.
Right.
And I still am. You know, when everything gets back together again, I'm always in and out of town and it's just I can't keep up with the schedule for a pet right now. So maybe later on when I retire, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Tim, it's been a fantastic interview. I want to thank...
Yeah, no problem.
Well, considering your Wikipedia is highlighting, you know, things that aren't relevant. What is relevant, you have been kind of in the acting, writing, directing business for what's going on, like, I guess, close to 50 years, really. There's a lot of things I'd like to get into with you, whether it's Star Trek or whether it's time with Nickelodeon or on the Twilight Zone, you know, even being in Spaceballs. But is there like when you look back in your career as of so far, is there a role that like you look back on and say that was like the role of a lifetime? Like that's something you want to be asked questions about and that what you want to be remembered for? Or do they all kind of... Are they all like your babies? Like, do you love them all equally? Or is there something that really sticks out to you as like, that was your favorite role?
Oh, well, you know, I have to say that there's a lot of them that, that sort of, I don't know, sort of blend together in terms of, my remembering anything specific about them. I know that, you know, Spaceballs, you know, albeit, you know, literally four words, kind of blew up into sort of a cult popular thing. I had no idea that was going to be the case when I booked that role. And also, I did a piece for a friend of mine who's directing. It was an indie film this a number of years ago called, you know, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. And it was a very unique project, and even today it's still unique in the way he did it. And so that role was so different for me because I don't usually get to play a character like that. As a matter of fact, almost never would you get a chance to play a character like that. Because typically I usually read for the same types of roles all the time, and independent films are the only times you can really stretch your wings out with something that's interesting. So, and it's not a super well known film by any stretch. It's just an independent film. It's out there, and I'm sure it's on Amazon somewhere. But it's just a really cool sort of an artsy piece the way it's done. It's a black and white noir kind of thing. And the original film was a silent film. So
if I'm not mistaken, I had to watch that in one of my film classes in college.
I am almost
positive.
Yeah, it is used in in film classes, generally in different parts of the different schools. They do use that because of the style in which it was shot. Right. And being a silent film, it's all about the shots and the setups and the composition,
mm-hmm.
And the metaphor that you're trying to get across with just the camera lens. And that's that and other films like that, you know, that's part of the lesson plan. And sure enough, you know, the rights were free, so he just did it, you know, and he basically added the dialogue to the film.
Right.
He wrote the script.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at the pictures online. Now I definitely remember the movie. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. He put the green screen, everything was shot on green screen, and the furniture pieces were made, you know, in green screen as well, like blocks for a chair, blocks for a table or a bench or whatever it might be. And so he put them on the set and he shot everything lined up with the actual plates from the movie. So each scene was a plate, and he would have the plate matching exactly what was on the set in terms of the pieces. So if you had to sit down on a bench,
right,
you know, he could see that you were sitting down on a bench, and it looked like you're sitting on the bench within the movie itself.
That's cool.
And he shot it all black and white, all noir. He took a year and then some of post-production just on it by himself to put all the shading and shadows in. It was just... It was just amazing, and I still have that piece on my my demo reel, and I don't plan on taking it off because it's that unusual.
It's very cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. But everything else, a lot of the rest of the roles, except for Star Trek in particular, that's obviously something that's certainly out of the box as far as doing. You know, their doctor shows and lawyer shows and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah,
so that is also a standout as far as something that was substantial in terms of career.
For sure.
Now, doing kind of like the math, it looks like from like what IMDb lists as your first role, you're around like 29 or 30. Just out of curiosity, were you... As you were growing up, were you set in mind that you were going to become an actor? You're very artistic. I know you have a great music career. Were you trying to still figure things out? How kind of like things came into line where you went into acting?
I studied it in college for 5 years prior to coming out to California. I got my SAG card while I was still in school. I worked on a masterpiece theater project for PBS. I worked on a local, I think it was a local or regional television show while I was still in school. So by the time I got to LA, I did plan to come to Los Angeles and to pursue it as a career. I took 2 years off after doing some graduate school work and then came out to LA in 81. And to pursue professionally. And I was working in music as well at the same time because I was actually supporting myself playing gigs at night. And so for a couple of years, maybe 2.5 years, something like that. And then eventually the acting, you know, just took off, you know, and it was, you know, it just clicked in I think it was 85. I was able to book a pretty good sized part in Dreamgirls at the Schubert Theater when it came to LA, with Jennifer Holliday. I booked, the fourth male principal in that show for about 3 months. And that was in 84. It was the end of 83. And then 85, when that rolled around, everything kind of took off in terms of television and film for me. So, you know, I had always planned, you know, to come here and pursue it at some point in time after school. Took off about 2 years after school and then came down in 81. But yeah, I planned to do that. And you know, after that, it's just a matter of when it happens or if it happens or how it happens. And you can't predict any of that. Looking back on it, I can see the path, but boy, you can't see it from the front by any stretch.
Yeah, no, and like we'll get to the Star Trek stuff in a minute, but like I wanted to ask you kind of like before, you know, like before, kind of like a before and after Star Trek question, like before you got into, you know, you got cast into Star Trek and went on to do several different things involving the franchise and whatnot, were you at all into to sci-fi and whatnot? And then the after question would be after this, that, you know, you have a fandom that is a rabid fandom, like Star Wars fans, you got Trekkies and whatnot. Like, how far has this gone as far as people, like, recognizing you? Like, how many years have you moved? Like, is it amazing still that the Star Trek world is, like, probably still reaching out to you, still enamored by you? Like, is it where you, like, how do you, like, handle all that as far as before and then after? You're kind of known for that forever after that.
Yes, you are. It is, you know, I knew intellectually that when I got this role and when I was actually reading for this role, that what I was in store for, and I realized how popular the franchise was.
Okay.
How enthusiastic the fans are, or were at the time, and you know, in reality, when I went to the first convention I went to, I was stunned by, you know, the excitement fans have for the show. You know, it doesn't have the number of fans that the average, you know, popular television show has, but the fans are tremendously enthusiastic, and they don't stop. They are always that way, and new fans come on board as it is as well. In fact, so it goes on. I'm continually invited to do other projects that might be Trek related. I've been doing conventions for 30 years, something like that, since the show started.
Yeah.
I've been doing those, and that's traveling all over the world, and also other projects, even recently, virtual things online, and it is never ending. You are once you join that family, you are part of that family, you know, and there's no walking away from it. Yes, I do get recognized on occasion. That's not that big a deal.
Right.
It's just once in a while here and there, but it's, it has changed a lot of things. It's opened doors for me in terms of my career. I've had more opportunities for work in other areas because of it. And have made some very good connections to people. I've gotten a few perks, having been associated with the show, with other things that are not related to Star Trek or not related to television and film. It has been remarkable, and it is ongoing. There is, you know, you don't really retire from it.
Mm-hmm.
You can become a recluse, I guess, and never do another convention, never, you know, do anything else Star Trek related, or, you know, you could probably do that, but you're always going to be otherwise associated with that role. There's no getting around that. Whatever I did before and after simply is not as relevant as that show, and that's just the way it is. I don't think it would have been the same if I had done 7 years on Baywatch, you know. Wouldn't have been the same, so as it is now. It's really crazy.
Amazing.
I mean, it's what's really amazing is, I mean, I kind of look at your journey with Star Trek kind of like a baseball player coming into an organization. Like, the way I see it is, you tried out for the big team. You tried out to be Geordi LaForge in 87. They're like, no, you can't make the team. But they liked you, and they kind of kept you in the system. Because then you did the Next Generation episode, and you did Deep Space Nine episode. Then you did the Generations movie before you finally got the role in Voyager. Just out of curiosity, like, by doing those other roles, was it something where they were in communication with you, where they were saying, hey, we really like you and we might use you for a new TV series? Or was it just like a wild coincidence of a role came up, you got it, and then you happened to be in the universe before the big role?
No, that was a straight line from the time I first read for the Next Gen series. That was a straight line all the way through. Because even while I was working on Generations, the producer said that they were developing Voyager, and he said he wanted to have me come in and read for it. So I knew that was in the near future. And as a matter of fact, it was also tactically, it was a tactical thing on my part as well, because I told my agency, I said, look, you know, they're developing another series role that you know, on this show. I know it's going to go 7 years, you know, guaranteed.
Yeah.
So we got to make sure that we're not stuck somewhere doing something else during that window of time. I didn't take any large projects that might take me out of town or keep me so busy I couldn't read for it or take another, you know, I didn't want to take anything else during that time. I turned down work and the possibility for work during that period of time because I knew that they were going to be reading that character at that window, and I wanted to be available for it. I didn't want to be on a, you know, like a movie of the week or some other noise that you know, comes and goes. I wanted to be, you know, available to read for that part because that's going to be, a 7 year gig. We didn't. I turned down work, and it was very close to not happening because they almost changed the character. They thought about making the character older than I was, and I would have been out of the running for that. So that was actually pretty close. It almost didn't happen. So we just got lucky, and they, you know, one day they called my agency and said, yeah, we'd like to have them come in and read. And I was available to read, and the rest is history. If I had not, you know, really kept myself available for that window of time, I might have lost that opportunity. I mean, again, that's like trying to, that was the one chance I could look down the road into the future and actually, you know, and actually try to plan for something, to try to make a decision about something or choice about something to manipulate my destiny in that effect by deliberately doing something to cause it to happen. And that was it. And the fact of the matter is, I think Rick Berman, who was the second in command under Roddenberry, liked me. And Roddenberry wasn't all that crazy about me, and it just so happened that after Roddenberry passed away, that's when I ended up working a lot.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how that goes, you know?
Now, Tim, like, you, I mean, if we were to go through your career, just the amount of stuff you've done as far as TV, it's endless. Everything from General Hospital, NCIS, to Hannah Montana, to CSI and everything in between. I guess my question is, you know, your guy's been in the business for a long, long time and has done small roles, larger roles, roles that have lasted for a while. If there was a young actor talking to you and asking like advice to break into the business and what kind of mindset to have, is it more of a take everything you can get kind of approach, or is it to be selective and nail something you'd be good at? Like, what is the advice you would give, like, maybe a kid coming out of college trying to break into the acting world?
Oh, if anybody's trying to get into this line of work, you literally will take anything and everything you can get your hands on.
Right.
It is just that brutal and difficult. You know, and the first words out of my mouth typically are, you know, you may want to think about doing some other line of work. That is every time anybody asks me about it, I look right at them and say, you may want to reconsider that.
Are you sure?
Yeah, you're absolutely positive you want to go down that road. It is a very bumpy road, as it were. But I tell them, I tell them specifically that they have to look in the mirror and they have to, you know, to see what's staring back at them. They have to know what their walk and talk is all about, what their ethnicity is, and they have to watch television and films and look at the roles that are on there and do they see themselves in any of those roles, because that's what it's going to be. It's a picture business, and you are going to be cast as a type. You're going to be cast as a type of character. So if you are you know, chubby and short and you have a funny looking face, guess what you're going to be doing? You're not going to be doing leading romantic roles, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, if you have a comic flair, you're going to be doing comedy. If you're a character, you're going to be doing characters. If you're, you know, a cheerleader, you're going to have the mean, nasty cheerleader sort of effect going on, or the ingenue, the bombshell, or you're the bookish girl next door with the glasses. I mean, whatever, you know, you have, whatever that walk and talk is, that I tell them, that's what you're going to be doing. When you walk in the room, before you even open your mouth, they're going to see you, and they're going to have already made three decisions before you even say anything. They won't even bring you in unless you sort of fit that mold anyway. So you, that's what you're going to be doing, and that's what you need to focus on, you know. And you can, in that interim time, I tell them, you can work on your skills, work on your chops, and if you can broaden your base as far as your talents, you might be able to book roles in which there's a nice emotional, you know, arc to the character. Or it might be something more psychological about the character rather than the way they look and sound. And you can expand on that. But otherwise, you're going to be playing a character type. And you have to figure out what that character type is. And then you hone that, you know, that skill to the nth degree so that you can, you know, get it when you walk in to read against 5,200 other people who look exactly like you do. So.
Huh, yeah. I feel like that's information kids need to hear, for sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's there's a lot of other depressions that require a tremendous amount of footwork and studying and everything else and hustle as well. But, you know, this in particular it's specific to the fact that it's a picture business. It's what people see on the screen. Big dumb football jock. I mean, if you don't have that going on, you know, that you're not going to be playing those roles. But if you do, those are the roles you're going to end up playing. You know, bodyguard, bouncer, military, soldier, whatever. You know, that's what you're playing. That's what they're going to be looking for, and that's the kind of stuff you're going to be doing. I mean, I typically book the same stuff all the time. I typically read for and book a lot of the same type of roles. Just the way it is.
Yeah,
makes sense. Yeah. Now the interesting thing that you brought up was, like, you talk about like being an actor, and like then when they train you, they like accentuate all your emotions and everything for the camera, for the screen. So when you're playing a Vulcan, is it harder since you know the role? You gotta kind of just be this calm, holding emotions character, or is it kind of easier because you're kind of set in a box to what is projected as this character?
For Tuvok, it's, you know, that character is easy compared to other roles, because as an actor, you study to show emotions, to show a range of emotions, to show emotional nuances in a character, and to make transitions between one moment and one beat to the next. And in my role as Tuvok, I play a character that doesn't show any emotion for 7 years. I mean, so it was easy for me to do that. Much easier than having to show the emotion. That is a lot more work. And I have, you know, as my friends like to point out, you know, I may have a few attributes that are similar to that character anyway. So it makes it that much easier for me to, you know, to get to him. It's just purely coincidental. That's the type of role I end up booking, as opposed to, a regular human character on those shows.
Yeah. Now I have a question. So you're in Star Trek all those years, and you're exposed to like amazing amounts of makeup and special effects and whatnot. Is that hard to get used to as far as getting made up to do these kind of roles? And then my kind of follow up with that is, I know you are on the Orville too, and we had Howard Berger on a couple weeks ago, the makeup artist and whatnot. I was just wondering if you had any interaction with him during that too.
I don't remember him specifically, but you know, I was very lucky not to have any heavy makeup. Yeah. I have had it before. You know, on DS9, and we also had an episode of Voyager, which I had to do the Borg thing all over. I can tell you, it's not my favorite thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is that like a thing you got to warm up to and get used to, or?
It's just something it's just not a comfortable thing.
Yeah.
You know, simply when you're working 12 hours a day, you know, plus the 2 hours before you get started and then the hour to get it off.
Yeah.
You know, and then you've got glue on your face for the next 3 days. I mean, it's it is not my favorite thing. And I honestly, if I was offered a role right now in full alien makeup, you know, every time I worked, I'm not sure I would want to take the role. I mean, I might turn it down just because I don't want to sit, you know, in that chair, you know, and you will be utterly exhausted for whatever period of time it is you're working, because the makeup is so, you know, so heavy, and it's miserably uncomfortable, and it's just, you know, it's hours and hours. I'm not sure I would want to do it on a full-time basis right now, to be honest with you.
Well, I definitely want to get into your singing career as well. I was checking out some of your music. I was listening to Lead Me Home, and let me just say, you got an incredible soulful sound, my friend. I mean, I'm not trying to lay it in there. You got an incredible voice. I'm just kind of curious, like, you've been doing, been touring as a musician for a while now. Do you kind of look at that as a second career or just like a side hobby? And on a side note to that, can you tell us a little bit about when you went up against Howard Stern that one time in Battle of the Bands?
Oh my God. I remember that. The singing has been going on 45 years now. I think 47, actually. I've been performing since I was 16 years old, off and on. I've made a living at it over the years. I've recorded since that time. I've done about 4 or 5 CDs of my own, and I was with Crescendo Records for one CD. And that's the time when I went on Howard Stern. I was with Crescendo Records. I was with Neil Norman's band. He was co-owner of the record company, so he managed to get us booked on that show. Howard Stern is a Star Trek fan as well, and so they wanted to do it as a gag, and I thought, yeah, it's cool. We'll go on and we'll play the song. We traveled to New York. We got the whole band went there. We set up in a studio at 6 or 7 in the morning. You know, not my favorite time to be singing, 6 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, we did that. It was a kick in the pants to do it. It was very cool. He's a very nice guy as well. It was great. But music I've been doing, like I said, since I was 16. And I'm still doing it now. I've got my own band in Los Angeles. I've been performing in this town for the last, since I've lived here, off and on. Since I moved here in 81, I was making a living at it in the early 80s. And then, in recent years, just recording CDs on my own and performing live in town. I've performed almost once or twice a month for, I don't know, the last 15 years. So, that's not going anywhere. I was able to book an NCIS New Orleans episode not long ago because I could play, you know, guitar, but play and sing blues guitar.
There you go.
I had to actually send them an audition reel of me playing and singing. It wasn't just reading for the role, because they ended up shooting the scenes live. We didn't shoot the playback. We played live, and they shot it. So I had to go to New Orleans. I had to work with the musicians out that they had booked out there from New Orleans. It's a band sequence and in a nightclub, so I had to work with them in the studio for 7 hours and then go in to do the scenes, the actual performance scenes, playing live with those guys. And I gotta tell you, that was a kick in the pants. I enjoyed doing that because it's a rare treat.
Yeah, something different. To,
you know, sit in with some really good players, especially in New Orleans, and to be able to perform, to play the role, and to be able to perform live on film.
Yeah,
That was a kick, and I would not have been able to do that if I had not been playing guitar for that long time and still playing, you know, still actively playing.
Yeah,
on a regular basis, I would not have been able to do it. I mean, I wouldn't have booked that role. I don't think so.
That's great. I mean, it's cool.
Big difference.
So what do all of your dogs think of your... No, sorry. No, Tim, I know this, you know, this pandemic and this quarantine has been brutal on entertainers as far as actors and musicians and writers and everything else. So I'm curious, is there anything that you have been working on, or any projects that you have coming up, or anything that your fans can look forward to during this, and kind of how have you navigated your way through this?
I shot a film recently up in Sacramento. My daughter was the lead in it, and vampire sort of horror genre, type stock sort of genre film. We just cut a trailer for recently, and that's going to be done probably next 2 or 3 months in post, called Slayer Chronicles. And I'm working, with a buddy of mine on another big sci-fi feature project that's not going to get underway probably till 2021, at least, preliminary shooting not going to happen till then. I've got a series, a science fiction series that is now, I'm partnered with Global Genesis Group here in Los Angeles, a production company, to produce this thing. I've got a showrunner that I'm waiting to hear back from in order to get that project up and running, and that's a series project. So I've got a couple things on the burners that are pretty good size. Those are big. The independent film Slayer is not that. It's just a small indie film. The larger projects are on the burner, and we'll see what happens with those. And acting wise, nothing that's concrete on the horizon right now. I've got a meeting with some people later this week. I put a role in a cop movie, and that's it. So, you know, the bigger projects, because the pandemic just slowed everything to a crawl. So, it was kind of going like gangbusters there for a minute. And then, so now I've got to wait until kind of this stuff kind of blows over or calms down before things start to really, really pick up like they were. Because right now they're not.
No.
So, it's all projects that are on the burner and in the works for right now.
Okay.
And I just released on Amazon, we released a movie called Junkie, and it's with Christian Kane. We just released that in early 2019, and I'm sorry, late 2019, early 2020. I'm in a film called Fifth Passenger, which is a science fiction film, pretty cool story. That's also out. Both of those are on Amazon, and both of those, and Fifth Passenger, I am playing a lead role in it, and in Junkie, I directed it. So those are actually on Amazon. Those two films were our recent releases.
Nice.
Awesome. So if people want to see everything that you're up to and or want to get a hold of you, what's the best place people can find out what you're up to, Tim?
Right now, you have a website, which is timrusswebpage.com. It's timrusswebpage.com. And I list the projects typically on there. I list my appearances on there. I've got some online appearances coming up, virtual conventions, as it were. So I list all of those things on that website. And also try to keep up with some of the projects that are being released. I also post stuff on Facebook. I'm on Facebook as Tim Russ. I'm on Instagram as TR Vulcan, TRVULCAN, and also on Twitter. So I put everything, I usually post to the projects or the links to projects or trailers and things like that I always post those things on those sites also, social media. That's what I use them primarily for. So they can find me in any number of places.
Awesome. One last question before you go. I'm a pretty avid horror fan. I was a big fan of Nightmare on Elm Street. I saw you in Freddy's Nightmares. Any chance that you worked with Robert Englund?
Robert Englund? No, I did not, because Robert, at the time, they would pre-record all of his bits because he was just the host. He was more or less the host in those shows. When I was on that show, because he would come on and do these bits, and then you'd have a whole story that may not be, you know, where he may not be in it, you know, actually in the show, in the episode. And if I recall, I think I was in that episode with one of the people from Leave It to Beaver.
You played Picard in that one. Your character was named Dr. Henry Picard, so that's another Star Trek reference we'll throw in here.
It is. It was. I think that was Leave It to Beaver, man. Actor Jeremy, was it Mathers? It wasn't Mathers. It was the other guy, his brother. And I think that's the same one. If I recall, that was actually a hell of a lot of fun, that episode we were in. It was a really bizarre episode. I'd have to look it up on IMDb to make sure, but that was that was actually a fun episode to work on. It was a lot of fun. But at the time, I think Englund was doing those bits by himself. They would film them all at one time and then attach all those bits in there. So it was kind of, you know, that's how they were doing it, I think, at the time.
Yeah. I came in here ready to ask you about your dogs and Robert Englund. I don't know what we're going to do now.
Oh, no. I didn't get a chance to meet him. No, I sure didn't. I remember the episode, though, which is more than I can say for a lot of the shows that I've worked on. A lot of them I just don't remember that well. But that one I do remember. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Tim, we really appreciate your time and hope this pandemic can get through so you can go out there and do some movies and make some music and enjoy life.
Yeah, man. Everybody else the same way. My best wishes to everybody going through all this and hope we can get through it quickly and be done, you know?
Yeah. It's coming. We'll get there.
I can't wait. Yeah.
We'll get there.
All right, man.
All right, the one and only Tim Russ, everybody.
Cool. It's good stuff and all. And we did Star Trek geek on him. He must have been happy with that.
Yeah, well, I don't really watch Star Trek, so I couldn't really geek it would be very disingenuous if I geeked out on Star Trek, but I don't know.
I loved you fighting with Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. I went through a little Star Wars geek stage when I was younger, but I don't know how much I've ever geeked too many other things. I don't know. I haven't done a deep dive geek into too many things. I've been fans of things, but I don't know. What do you geek out about? I've been really into sports teams along the way, but I've never really been like a comic geek or a Star Trek geek or, I don't know, I never played Dungeons & Dragons, I don't know.
No, I'm trying to think. I mean, I know Izzy has basically recently become like a Star Wars geek. I mean, she is like emphatic with Star Wars nowadays. And the funny thing was, it probably is because Disney bought them. I'll be perfectly honest with you.
Yes.
I remember it was about 2 or 3 years ago. You remember Rogue One? Was that about 2, 3 years ago?
Yeah, it was a couple years back now. Yeah,
it was a few years back, but I went with my parents and her for Christmas. That was a movie we saw. And she had no interest. She didn't know what was going on. She actually fell asleep during the movie.
Really?
And then basically it's like like Disney got more inclined with Star Wars, and she's like, all right, I'm gonna start seeing this. First off, I had to save her because she tried to start with episode one, and I'm like, no, you do not.
She should be like, you don't like, even really have to watch that one. You don't even really need that one.
Well, but it was like she went back and forth with me. I'm like, you don't understand. If you start with one, you will never make it the rest of the way. You have to start with the original three, four, five, and six. Saw four, five, and six. Loved them. Saw one, two, three. She had like some mixed feelings on some of them. Started reading up on them. Then started falling in love with them again. Like she has these theories on like Jar Jar Binks being a Sith Lord and stuff like that. She's super into the Mandalorian. Like a couple days ago, we passed a store. We found they sell like Star Wars stuff. She got a Darth Vader Pez, a huge big one for her Disney room.
Okay.
But I guess like I was a football geek for a while, like super into it. Like a lot of my stuff were the former name of my football team. Who is 1-0, by the way?
1-0, baby. 1-0 football team.
No name, no losses. I love it. I think that's probably my big one. I think I did a little bit. Like I played with a friend, those role-playing dice games a little bit, but that was...
Wrestling geek for a little bit. Like, early on, like probably 7th grade, me and my buddies were really into wrestling. I guess that can count, because there's a lot of geeks in that, but I don't know. All right, brother, what do you got?
Well, Scott, me and my wife had a very interesting adventure running this past week.
Okay.
So we're both doing kind of like training to kind of get back into doing marathons right now. Izzy has a coach who gives her like a full layout on, you know, each day, this is what you're supposed to do running and so forth. So up until last week, it was like insane humid down here in Georgia. It's been bad. It's like upper 80s. 90% humidity during the day. Like, nobody wants to go out
right
during that stuff. So the day before, we did like about a 55-minute run, and I was asking her about the next day, and I thought she told me another 55-minute run. It was Saturday night, and we kind of woke up late, and I'm like, you know what? We'll go around 7-ish, and we'll do a trail. So we went to the Silver Comet Trail, it's called. It's one of the biggest walking, running trails in the South. And it actually goes all through Georgia into Alabama. It's a very huge trail.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into this all the time thinking, we're running for 55 minutes. And we probably start running about 7:15.
Okay.
Sundown is about 7:56. So we're going along about, I think we're like 17 minutes in. I'm like, all right, in 10 minutes, that's our turnaround point. And then
right.
She's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, we're running 55 minutes today. She's like, no, I told you we're running 85 minutes today.
Okay.
So the turnaround point is 42 and a half minutes.
Okay.
Okay, so
I see where this is going.
Yeah, so let me give some backstory on the trail. Beautiful trail. There's some open spots where you can see like either the railroads go by, there's open sky and stuff like that. But I would say the majority of the trail, huge trees covering you from above. Not a lot of things that are going to give off natural light to begin with.
Okay. So it's kind of enclosed a little bit.
It's enclosed. And when the sun goes down, there's literally nothing. It is pitch black. Another thing I should say before I continue with the story, The story, the trail, is also called the Murder Trail.
Oh, the Murder Trail.
Yeah, the Murder Trail, because there have been stories of people who got picked off the trail and, you guessed it, murdered.
Oh, yeah, I got that one. I used my brain on that one.
Yeah. So.
Now, what are you equipped with?
Going along.
Like, do you guys have phones on you at all? Do you have anything with you?
I have my, we have our phones with us. I have like my Apple Watch.
Okay.
But that's pretty much it.
All right.
Other than that, my keys, I'm running with nothing else. So,
I assume this just ended very normally. You found your way back home, and then you guys had a delicious dinner.
Well, we did everything. We made it home.
Obviously.
Everything was good on that side. But
it'd be weird if you were like, Scott,
I'm here.
It'd be weird like, Scott, I, Berlo, turn your camera on. It is on. I'm in the middle of the murder trail right now. Still trying to find a way back, but I'm here for our interview.
Yeah. Yeah. Be weird. It's like, and Scott, I was the one that was murdered. But,
maybe so the murderers, maybe the murderers from the murder trail are just people who got lost on the trail over the years, and they just stay out there, and they gotta like, they can't find their way back, and they just pick off people and murder them to eat. No.
Well, I mean, like I said, it goes to Alabama. I mean, maybe they make it to that state and just say, screw it, I'm going to kill myself, but yeah. I digress.
Yeah.
So literally 20 minutes into this 85-minute run, sun's down, it's pretty much pitch black. And we got to run, literally, I got to keep my flashlight on my phone and pray I have enough battery to get through with it.
Right.
So when
it's pitch black, are you still running, or are you like, did you like, okay, we should probably walk this. Okay.
No, we're running. We can, I mean, the trail is clear. There's nothing on. So there's nothing to do that. When we train, we do intervals. So we do 2 minutes of running, 1 minute of walking.
Right.
You know, keep our energy up. So we finally get to the halfway point, turn around, keep going. White goes, okay, stop running. Interval stopped. I turn to my right. It's like a horror movie scene because I'm literally right in front of the memorial they have for the murdered person. I'm like, literally, if I take one step, if I'm one step behind or one step forward, I'm not perfectly centered. As she said, okay, stop running. To turn my head and see. Yeah. And I'm not panicking or anything, but needless to say, I'm getting goosebumps doing this whole thing. And I also know I can't tell Izzy.
Okay, so she doesn't know it's called the murder trail at all.
No, she knows it's the murder trail.
Oh.
And she knows it's a memorial for the person, but she didn't know where she said, okay, stop. Was the exact spot of the murdered person's memorial.
Okay.
So I kept it to myself.
Okay.
And then we run our way back. I mean, probably the whole run probably took us, let's see. Yeah, it took 85 minutes. So we probably did about a little over seven and a quarter miles. And when we're running, both of us, we're tired. We can't talk to each other. We get annoyed with each other in like 5 seconds. So I'm trying to keep it to a minute. She starts to talk about the darkness, and I'm like, just keep running. Like, don't talk about it. If you talk about it, you're going to get spooked out. I mean, from time to time, I hear like a branch crack or something like that. I'm turning around. I'm keeping my head on a swivel. I'm kind of like doing my haunted house thing, as I told you, keep my head on a swivel.
Right, right.
Make sure everything's good in life.
180 degrees. But, 180 degrees.
Yeah, pretty much. And even at one point, as we were coming up to a road, I kind of noticed like a car went by, and like I said, it's just us running with our flashlights. We're probably about a good quarter of a mile, half a mile from the guy, but the guy even kind of like moved his car backwards to kind of look. And I think he was kind of like, what the hell was that? And all with the light there. But so that kind of added to the freakiness.
Right.
Finally get to the car. Like, he's a dead tired in the car. And she, Izzy's panning hard. She's like, oh my God, that was terrible. Don't want to ever do it again. As we drive away, that's when I finally admit to her, hey, FYI, that one time you said stop, we were right in front of the murdered person's memorial. Right. So she's like panicking, freaky. What does that mean? Blah, blah, blah. She's like, we could have got killed or whatever. And I'm trying to calm her down. And I don't know where I come up with this logic, but I told her, well, if a murderer is out there in the woods, they're more likely to be in the dark in the morning versus in the dark at night. And my thought process with it is, I said that at morning, they know people are out there running, so they have a target. At night, they figure everybody's at home, so they're not going to be there in the middle of the night just waiting.
So you think there's, like, murder shifts. Like, okay. Like, I got to get a good night's sleep. You know, because when the morning comes, I got to get to murdering. You know, like, they worked a 9-to-5. It's a union job.
Well, it's not a, like, it's not like their plan or whatever, but I think strategy, if they're looking to just grab a random person, whether a man or woman, you're more likely to get it at, say, like 5 a.m. where the sunrise is 6:30, where people are out there getting their morning run early versus at night where everybody's like, well, it's getting dark, I'm heading home.
Oh. So I feel like you're speaking from a the logic of someone who has experience doing this. Like, I feel like you were like, look, I've done some night murders. They're, it's not smooth. Like, you got to get the morning people. It's better. It's cleaner. You have a lot more time to clean up, you know, and nighttime will come again. So you can start cleaning the bodies up again.
Well, I'm not a murderer or anything like that, but I think logically saying if somebody was to want to set up this crime, that's the best thing to do it, in the morning. That's my thought process. And I kind of had this same back and forth with Izzy where I'm like, listen, I'm just trying to calm you down. And then she's like, well, how would you know all this information?
She slept with one eye open all night. She's like looking at you in bed, like, go to sleep, Mike. And like, just go to sleep. Like, watching your every step.
Babe, let's wake up early in the morning and do that run again.
Let's go exactly 46 minutes away. Babe, I'm going to do a 46-minute run. No, I'm going to do a 92-minute run. You do a 46-minute one. It's your last one. Well, interesting. So, you... I guess you're now accustomed to the murder trail. Are you guys going to go back for a second jaunt on the murder trail?
Well, we've been on there plenty of times. We'll go there during the day. But needless to say, now I have her running schedule. Her teacher gave me access to their Google Sheets. So now I know exactly how long we're running, where we can plan out, where we're not. In the middle of the woods, in the middle of the night.
Oh, okay. Well, I think maybe you should sponsor a Verbal Shenanigans murder trail run and do it at night.
The murder marathon?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. All at night. Starts at, like, I don't know, what's good murder hours? Probably, I feel like murder hours are probably good, like, when bars close. I feel like a lot of people probably get murdered right after that. You know, so maybe like a 1 o'clock start, 1 a.m., and then the murder marathon goes to, yeah, like 1 to 6 in the morning.
Okay. Well, that's all in line with what I told Izzy. See, that's the early morning time that murderers would be out there, in my opinion.
And you can make it interesting. Like, you know, you get to certain checkpoints and then people start chasing you. So you get better times on your marathon.
Oh, okay. It's kind of like one of them zombie runs, except somebody will literally kill you.
Exactly. No, you sign a waiver, like, you will, like, people will die during this marathon. Like, it's just part of the fun and the enjoyment of it.
Yeah, I mean, as long as there's a waiver, it's all cool. And there's no harm.
Yeah, I mean, like, so what? You, like, say you have 100 people and maybe, like, 20 perish. It's not, you know, it's not crazy numbers.
Yeah, we'll just have to tell the murderers we hire, you know, make sure they got one of them bibs on. Don't be murdering just regular people now. They paid good money for this murder marathon. I'm not going to give away this experience for free.
Exactly. Speaking of zombies, I just saw the thing come across that The Walking Dead is finally ending. Do you have anything in that anymore, or are you completely out?
I still watch it.
Wow.
As the announcement came, I say the same thing. It makes absolutely no sense what they announced, because there's apparently two spinoffs.
Yep, I saw
one
that
of them
too.
Will have Norman Reedus and the person who played Carol.
Give it up already,
and
man.
My first thought is, you literally told me now that they're going to survive the rest of the way. So right there, you kind of took away from the plot. You could say we have two spinoffs from the show and not announce who's on it, or even literally hire every actor, say technically you're on contract for this spinoff, knowing that you may not be. You might die in this episode.
Yeah, I give you credit for sticking it out. I mean, I left the show even before Rick died, it was airlifted. I saw the preview for that. It just looks like another episode of The Walking Dead. But I give you credit for sticking it out, because boy, did it rebound at all? Like, is it at all better than it was for a couple seasons there?
They did do some rebounding. I think they finally got to the realization when they got rid of Rick. It's like, you know what? There's only a couple people care about now. So let's just go batshit crazy and just like do these crazy things. It's like, oh, they just murdered these six people and stuff like that. I mean, I think why it died to most people is because they got to the point where it's like, well, they're popular, we can't get rid of them. It's like, no, the show was great because you never knew who was going to be taken off the show, and they lost the face of it. It's like The Sopranos. If you knew, I mean, outside of Tony, there was always a question of who would die at some point. There was always an episode where it's like, you don't have this big fanfare or anything like that. It's like, all right, episode six, whatever. Da, 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 da. What the?
Yeah.
And they just stopped doing it.
Yeah, for me, the show just got really lazy. And then it also, what destroyed it for me was when they started like doing solo episodes of like characters, and you wouldn't see like Rick for four episodes, and you're like, what? I don't even care about this person. Nonetheless, should they have their own episode? Why can every other show weave in a bazillion characters and figure it out, but you guys have to give these guys full hours? So, and we're breaking that into actual TV, which you can't binge. You're talking a month before you see Rick again. It doesn't even make any sense. That's where the show lost it for me. And then And I found that the new characters they started introducing, like, I didn't care about them because you weren't invested in them every week. It might have been another 4 weeks till you seen them again. So you're not like growing with them. You're just like, oh, who's that guy again? Like, who the hell is that guy? And then this period came where I was DVRing them and trying to watch them and falling asleep and trying to watch them and falling asleep. Before I knew it, there was like 8 episodes in my DVR. And I'm like, I think I've tapped out. I think I've tapped out. Like, you know, like the whole Negan thing. Like, I just felt like it never hit the way that it was supposed to, and it just lost me over the years. And so I don't know.
Yeah, those freaking season enders where it's like, all right, something's going to happen tonight, and then it's like, nope, it's going to happen in the first episode next year, and it's like, up yours, buddy. Again, like you said, they added like 80 characters, and they're like, look, character 64 died. It's like, well, they're not, I just barely met them. And all, I mean, once in a blue moon, you get a guy in there. It's like, oh, yeah, I feel bad that it happened. But They just put too much emphasis on, yeah, character 49 now. So what about that?
Who is still around that someone who watched early or somewhat early, who's still alive?
Let's see. There's Daryl.
Daryl, yeah.
There's Carol. Negan. I think those are the only two, like, the originals.
Really?
Michonne just bowed out last season. Well, she's not dead. She's on a hunt for Rick on a boat, which is, I guess, is supposed to lead to the movie, which I'm not even sure if they're doing the movies anymore. I mean, right now they got Walking Dead, which will split off into two spinoffs. They got Fear the Walking Dead. They have like a two-season miniseries that's coming out where it's like 14-year-old kids as just as the outbreak happened. So, and again, questionably, the Rick movie. So, that's pretty much
it. It's too much, man. It's too much. It's like when you throw out too much content out there, it's just you stop caring. You stop caring when there's just too much, and you're like, all right. Like, we're never going to wrap this up in a nice package where we can be like, oh, that was a great series. Like, oh, here's 100 options to watch something about The Walking Dead. Like, what? Because it's zombies? You can just keep doing that world over and over. And is Morgan still alive?
That was the cliffhanger from... He went to Fear the Walking Dead. Yeah. And the cliffhanger is like... They were with some group and... The girl stabbed him in the stomach and like the whole town's on fire. And like literally as he can't walk, there's like zombies walking up to him. So there's no reason why he should be alive. So there's every reason to believe, yeah, they'll come up with some stupid reason why he lived.
Now, where do they live? Are they like in another new like sanctuary kind of place, or are they still walking around?
Alexandria, they've moved out to Virginia. It's kind of like the comic books. They went up to Virginia.
Yep.
Like there was an episode where they were grabbing stuff from the White House for supplies.
Really?
So,
good.
Or the Capitol building, something like that. They were in DC, but they're in Alexandria. Fear the Walking Dead, I believe, is Texas or somewhere in that range. Okay. I have no idea about the new show.
Now,
who knows where Rick is at? I know he's at some army base or something like that. That's why he got taken off in a helicopter. That's apparently in the books. I don't know.
Are they?
You know what's bad? It's when I know these are facts, but it still feels like I'm making up this information.
Yeah, sounds like you're just grasping at straws. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think this guy's alive. I don't know. I think this is where they go. I don't know, man. That's a perfect example of a show that got too big.
Oh, Glenn's wife is still alive. Maggie.
Oh,
she's still alive.
She's still
but
around.
She took off a whole season because she was... Yeah, that was another dumb thing. Like, so she got another... got another TV show. So like she was in for like one episode in the season. Then they're like, Maggie went out for a big supply run. She won't be back for a while. So she was gone the whole season. And now that her old show tanked, now it's like, yeah, Maggie's coming back.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's like that whole season where they're like, where she was pregnant for 800 years, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh,
yeah.
She had the baby. Like, they didn't even, like, oh, just the baby's around now? Oh, cool. Like, it's just so weird, man.
Yeah, they just went, you know what, we're going to time warp to 3 months from now, and the baby's all good.
Yeah.
And then it's always the same thing. It's like, we're going out to kill this group. And it's like, who the hell's watching your baby?
Yeah. That's a show that's got, it was too big and too good early. And they just had no idea how to try to wrap it up into a Breaking Bad-esque ending where you satisfy everyone. And it's just like, let's just keep our audience as long as possible, but we have no actual end in sight. Like, is there any hints at like, them getting out of this and the world turning back, or is it just let's just keep wandering around until it's over?
I would say like as they did time jumps, they were like built a community and they have a bunch of people that they brought up, you know, some of them from like
This sounds like you're. This sounds like you're doing a Mad Libs. Like, you remember those things where you just and then the community and then Maggie had a baby and then she came back. You know, like I don't know, man. It's just why you know that could have had like a perfect like 6, maybe 7 season run and been perfect. You know, they could have figured it out and told the story the way it was supposed to be. These actors got to be getting sick of it too. Like, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm sure the money's fantastic, but like, are people really that in love with Daryl anymore? Like, they're not over the guy who shoots bow and arrows somehow has an arrow all the time. Like, they're not done with him.
Well, he's got another. He's got that side AMC show where he just rides a motorcycle. And so like, that's all the premise is. It's like, look at Daryl, but he's not Daryl. He's Norman Reedus, and he's on a motorcycle, and he's got friends. Some of them are from The Walking Dead. Watch him ride motorcycles.
Well, I don't know. What will end first, Verbal Shenanigans or The Walking Dead? That's a good question.
Well, I mean, I guess tactically we'll keep going past Walking Dead because what will remain are the spinoffs. If you're talking about the whole Walking Dead series, I guess your baby's going to have to get used to daddy sitting in front of a microphone every week. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. But I do know we'll be back next week, but it's time to put a bow on this one. Berlo, anything to promote before we get out of here?
Well, you kind of brought it up a little earlier. October's almost here, so pumpkin spice, whatever, back again. Why not? it's a show with me and my wife where we just randomly try different pumpkin spice stuff and just talk about random events and so forth. Got a cute little small following. So if you are interested in what I'm doing, you can see me on Facebook. My site is Michael Berlew Random Stuff. I also share it on the Verbal Shenanigans Facebook page. 31 days of pumpkin spice items. Always interesting stuff. I'm going to be trying to get a pumpkin spice cheese this year, so fingers crossed. It's called pumpkin spice whatever, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. And I will promote, I was on a podcast this week called Who's Your Band with comedians Jeff Paul and Sean Martin. And we did an episode about one-hit wonders, and it was a good time. So go check out their podcast. They usually talk about, like, who's your band that you follow, and they just do a lot of, like, music banter and chat. I had a blast on it, so it was a lot of fun. I even brought up some of our past guests, like Brian Vander Ark from the Verve Pipe, and you know, there was one other one I brought up from our show, One Hit Wonder. But either way, it was cool. We're talking about the best one hit wonders of all time and whatnot. So go give them a follow on social media.
Dyson Knight?
No, it wasn't Dyson Knight. It was someone else, but I can't remember at the moment, so I don't want to bore people with my thinking. other than that,
you do that every week.
Exactly. We did that for the last hour and a half, so I don't want to kill, you know. You have a shirt that says, I'm just here to pet the dogs?
Yeah, wife got it for me.
Appropriate. Anyway, guys, what you can do is give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that fun stuff. And give us a rating on iTunes. That is what helps us most get into these charts and get up into the suggested podcasting. Other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
Evening. Murder Train.